You're tuned in to Mango Masala, Pi Radio South Asian show. My name's Gerns. I'm here with Halima.
Hey, everybody. It's really warm in here. Gosh.
Never thought I'd hear you complaining about that.
Oh, no. No, me neither. But it's actually really... You know what? The studio is very much like a glass house. Like, it's really cold in the winter and then really warm in the summer.
Yeah.
Like, there's no... It's rarely ever, like, temperate in here, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Can never win.
No, you actually can't.
No. Speaking of never winning,
oh god,
you might recall over the past couple of weeks we've been speaking about how I was having a little gathering at my house and it was inevitably going to involve some karaoke. Now, we'd planned over the last couple of weeks, oh, we're going to do Kerry Hilson, Neo, Kanye, Knock You Down. This is how it's going to go. It's a trio song.
Planned, Carlos basically told Simon and I that we... Yeah. No, he told us we are doing it and we don't have a choice.
Yeah.
That's it, basically.
And you were all for it. You were both all for it.
Yeah, I love a cheeky bit of karaoke, as I'm sure Carlos will attest to in a bit.
That being said, it gets to the day and Halima's not really necessarily feeling it. She's feeling a bit under the weather and whatnot. I think it was towards the end of the gathering that we started.
I was on my period and my cramps had started, my backache had started. I was a bit headachy and I was like, yeah, and it was towards the end of the evening. And I was like, can I be bothered to do karaoke? Not really.
And I will say it's at that point that my you don't have a choice kind of kicked in.
Yeah.
Because also...
He was like threatening me, guys. No, like, Carlos can be really intimidating when he wants to be.
I'm not going to lie. The main reason behind it was you had been given all of that on the mic in terms of on radio for the past couple of weeks, being like, I'm going to sing all three parts. I'm the best.
Yeah.
I'm going to outshine everyone. I'm so good at karaoke, blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly you were like, oh, no, I'm not feeling it. I was like, absolutely not. I'm not going to come on radio next week.
Yeah,
and
then tell them what happened.
Well, obviously, I insisted that Halima has to join in because me and Simran were both like, no, you have to do it. So it gets to our turn and we're all sitting down ready. And I was like, you know what? This is going to be a really wholesome moment. Let's go for it. Obviously, Kerry Hilson starts off the song and I had allocated Halima that part. And let's just say it wasn't in tune.
I'm just gonna
cut to the chase. It wasn't in tune.
It
was not in tune. So obviously there was the whole first verse. Me and Simran were like, oh my gosh, what have we done?
I'm not gonna say, listen, I'm gonna put my hands up and I have said time and time on this show, I am pretty uniquely tone deaf. I have admitted it many a time. Which is why every time you sing the Bad Vibes Island jingle, that's the reason why I don't sing along, because I'm like, I wanna retain our viewers.
Anyway, so there was that. And then when it got to the chorus, I was like, okay, fine, we can join in a bit. Maybe I'll try and salvage it. And then yes, me salvage it, the one with perfect pitch who has a music degree. Yes, salvage it. Then it gets to obviously Neo doing the second verse. I'm like, okay, it's my time to shine. I can pull it back a bit. Lo and behold, Halima continues as she said she was going to do, singing every single word. I'm literally like, what the F are you doing?
Guys, the worst decision you made was put me on that mic. Like, I didn't want to go on at first, yes, granted, but as soon as I'm on there, I just remember how great it is to be on a mic and
but
to be singing.
Sharing is caring, Halima. You went to divide us up. You just kept on singing all my parts. I was literally like, what are you doing? And then obviously came to Simran's party, did the same. And by the end of it, I was like, okay, well, that was interesting. Don't know what I've created here. And yes, it was very much what have I created here? Because me and Simran came off the mic then. Halima did not. For the rest
of the night,
Halima was sat in the same place, hogging the mic, singing along with every song. Bearhand, also, it's like a app. Not Apple TV, but I can like screencast to it. So it's screencasting from my phone. And she just starts overtaking my phone, screencasting songs on there so she can sing. I'm just like...
I did do that. I did do that.
As soon as the Mariah Carey came on, because I know you've spoken about that before, I was
That's my OG karaoke song.
It's done. I've created a monster.
You did. And the thing is that I warned you. I actually warned you, and you didn't take. You, and you didn't take my word for it. You thought that you would be able to. I'm uncontrollable on a karaoke mic, guys.
I mean, you're uncontrollable most of the times anyway, so let alone when it's on a karaoke mic.
I love karaoke. I love it. Even if I might not feel like doing it, it's one of them ones where as soon as I'm on the mic and I'm singing, like, the whole world just melts away.
And it's just like, it's not like here where I can literally just press a button and you're silenced to an extent. It was just like,
I did get many death stares from Carlos, but I continued.
More than stares, I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
but
many death threats. I continued regardless. And you know what? I had the time of my life.
That's not commendable.
Thank you, Sachin, for providing the karaoke machine.
Why are you saying that, like, oh, I carried on regardless, as in, like, you were venturing forward as if it's
I was.
Yeah, but as if it's a positive thing. It was not a positive thing.
Well, everyone else loved it, so ignore Carlos, guys. He's just jealous. He's actually just jealous that I stole his spotlight.
I'm sure that's probably part of it, yeah. But
yeah, exactly.
But
exactly.
Still, it was an eventful evening, to say the least. But
if anyone wants to hire any karaoke singers or, like, MCs or whatever, listen, you know where to reach me at Mango Masala Radio. Just ask for Halima in the DMs. It will reach me.
Anyway, aside from that, it was a nice little evening, Halima.
Yeah, it was cute.
I will say you made up for the karaoke with the food. Lots of very nice food that you provided. That was really nice.
You're welcome.
Yeah, very nice. Just thought I had to get a little bit of positive stuff in the beginning there because...
Positive? Sounds like you were just going in on me.
Lack of seriousness.
Yeah,
because
right.
Even though I'm reluctant to ever let you on karaoke at my house again...
It was entertaining.
It was to a certain extent, yes. Yeah. I'm sure it was much more entertaining for others who weren't triggered.
Seething with jealousy. I'll take it.
Anyway, since that happened last week, there's been a number of less positive or more serious events that have happened.
How does so much happen in a week? It wasn't even a full week. It was only on Sunday and it's Saturday now.
Yeah, it's the way it is, isn't it? I thought let's start off with, I think, something that's a bit more of like a debate almost, because I think there's some positives and negatives to this. So obviously, as we know, millions of Gazans are crowded into southern Gaza in Rafah, where Israel is continuing to attack from all ends, people being displaced, people being burnt alive, some horrible images surfacing of literal beheaded babies, and you can go and Google that. Like, it's there for you to see. So I think that was like pretty much at the beginning of the week. It was that these visuals of these images of literal, it was like hell on earth because it's like fire and like it's horrible. So that was going viral. And then at this time on Instagram specifically, they have those templates, don't they, that it's very easy that you can just click and share to your story. And one of these templates was one that was made up of, I still don't know what it is. Is it body bags that it's made up
of? I think body bags.
I mean, we're gonna get into this, but I was a bit confused about what it is anyway. But it's basically an AI generated image made up of body bags, I think, in Rafah, and it's saying all eyes on Rafah. Now, over the course of the start of this week, I think me and Mayanka noticed as well. We were like, wow, like, this is really interesting because so many people who we haven't necessarily seen speaking about what's going on
basically
in Palestine.
This image, this template went viral.
Yeah,
it was like tens of millions of reshares and reposts,
and even within like our own circles as well. I've seen this image so much shared, so much more than anything else since October 7th.
Yeah,
and obviously, when we first saw that, we were like, it is quite interesting how this is the thing that seems to have got everyone's attention, and this is what everyone's sharing.
Yeah.
Now, I think there are some pros and cons to this, and I feel like I know which side you're going to speak on, so I'm going to let you speak first about this.
Well, no, I do see both. I do see both sides. I see, like, I get the pros is, like, people will be like, you know what, at least it's awareness.
Mm.
And I get that that can be very important, because this is, as much as it is for Gazans and Palestinians, like, a physical war and a physical massacre and a physical attack, it is at large, you know, on like a political level, because obviously I feel awful having to sit and like politicize death and tragedy, but it is ultimately a political problem, and it is a war of like consensus, you know. And what has been happening to the Palestinians for decades to some degree has been allowed to happen, because the vast majority of the world have just been turning a blind eye and kind of like not really understanding or not really siding with the Palestinians. And if this is something that allows people to engage with it or kind of like show their support, it is better than nothing.
I think the term is a net positive in that overall.
Net positive, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, like it is. It's better than nothing.
Yeah.
and then I think in that regard, I do get it. But then also, I kind of like can't ignore the more problematic aspects of it. It kind of it took me really back to the black box kind of activism. Mm.
Yeah, that is the first thing that I thought of when I saw this. Yeah,
it kind of took me back to the black box activism of summer 2020 during the BLM movement. For those who aren't aware, like, people were kind of posting a black box on their stories and whatever, calling it, you know, hashtag Blackout Tuesday in support of the Black Lives Matter movement in 2020. And at the time I had a problem with it, because it was kind of like a lot of people who weren't necessarily speaking up about black you know, black rights, black liberation, whatever, were all of a sudden posting this one black square and then counting that as their, like, you know, like, okay, that's enough activism for today kind of thing. And it felt very, very, very similar here with the issue of, you know, all eyes on Rafa, because it's like, it's people who had previously not spoken up at all and who had just now posted this one kind of template. And it feels like they've done that because it's very easy to do. Firstly, the fact that this is an AI-generated image doesn't sit right with me, because we have been absolutely inundated. I really believe that in decades to come, when we look back on what has happened, like, in this period in Gaza, one of the things that will characterize this thing from a socio-political commentary or a historical commentary level is how inundated we have been with images, how digitized, how documented this whole thing has been.
Hasn't it been called like the first live stream genocide?
Live stream
like
genocide,
yeah.
Exactly. And we're gonna really understand the reverberations of that only in decades to come. But this is a real life phenomenon, as in we are seeing these images day in, day out. You know, and the fact that none of these were shared and it was an AI generated. And the thing is, as well, there's actually the kind of AI generated image of body bags. There is a real life photo.
Yeah, I've seen people sharing that, saying, share this.
It's instead, you know, and it's like, I think what it is, it's kind of like palatable, performative activism. You know, like, people don't want to share the real life kind of images or whatever. They share something that's a lot more palatable to kind of everyday sensibilities, and
even to the extent that for some people, I'm sure it kind of fits in with their aesthetic.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it. And it's like, it also doesn't have anything, it doesn't say anything, doesn't give any facts or figures or any information, no kind of signposting to donations or petitions or protests, nothing. It's literally all the text is all eyes on Rafa. And if you are someone, and I think the vast majority of the people who were resharing that were people who had previously not said anything, not shared any information, really, truly, what does that do?
Yeah.
Like, beyond kind of like showing some level of consensus, some level of support, like, what does it actually do? Like, that's the thing that's just so difficult about the situation, because it's like, it's very performative, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen some, like, arguments in saying that we should still view this as an overall positive thing, in the sense that also someone pointed out that, just like, because obviously there's the image of actual body bags and stuff, and we've, like I say, been inundated with images over time, but also there's been arguments that the actual algorithm of social media wouldn't have let these horrific images go viral, yet this is something that can raise awareness but also is going to be supported by the algorithm in that sense. So it
I think though that kind of, something like that, an argument like that is a byproduct of it. That's not an intentional objective of people sharing the
post.
Yeah,
no, 100%.
You know? That's kind of like just happened to happen. You know, my issue is what the people who are sharing it, who have previously not engaged and not said anything. And also, by the way, like, there's also a level of this that worries me where it's like, why are people only speaking up now? We've just said that this is a genocide that has been live streamed. It's literally called the first live stream genocide that has been going on, what, for 8 months now?
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, what the images and the footage coming out of Rafah is extremely, like, indescribably harrowing. But yeah. Also, there were so many other instances and so many other types of footage that were also indescribably
this
harrowing.
This is the thing, right? Because obviously the images that came out at the start of this week and the videos were, I think, arguably it is fair to say they are some of the most horrific that
they
we
are,
have seen
they
so
are.
Far.
They are.
That being said, like you've just
But not uniquely
said,
so,
yeah,
though.
Exactly. Like, and we have seen, like, not far off from it, we've been seeing multiple images, videos, and it's, like I say, it's only now. But I do think that that is what has generated this surge of
The thing with that is, and this is what annoys me so much about, like what it feels sometimes that people's sympathies are kind of like arbitrarily triggered. Mm. Like Biden, for example, has not really outwardly or explicitly condemned the Rafah massacre in the way that he's needed to, because he's referred to something as a red line. And he said that it's not crossed his red line. And basically the idea of his red line is kind of like something that is indefensible, you know, like something that Israel, he's saying that Israel have not done anything as of yet that has crossed the red line for him.
You know, I'm literally thinking of a visual in my head right now where it's like the piling up of bodies, but it's still
it's
his
red
line is like
you understand.
Never reaching it. Yeah.
But I feel like kind of Western, this kind of Western performative activism is kind of similar, because it's like, okay, it might be very, very harrowing what we've seen, but it's not uniquely so. And also, why does it have to be uniquely harrowing in order to gauge your support? Because everything that we've seen thus far should also have been harrowing enough to kind of arouse sympathies and support, you know? And it kind of bothers me. It's like it's only now. And it's not lost on me that this is kind of like a social media trend. It's not lost on me that so many people have likely shared it because they've seen other people share it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think that people have had 8 months worth of opportunities to step up and to speak and to show solidarity and support, and they're only doing it now when everyone is posting this one very generic, very general AI obscured kind of image.
I think, again, the people out there would argue, though, that ultimately we still need to see that as a net positive. And I think the main thing that I'm taking from this is, yes, it is. I think my main problem is when people are just doing that, but then it's like, okay, but if you're not then going and taking the appropriate steps, if that's where your activism stops, if you're not then offering anything else in terms of sharing resources or whatever, or you're not going and doing that work, then, but the thing is as well, we can't judge people because ultimately we don't know what anyone has done. We can't, like, for example, I know there are plenty of people out there, like myself, for example, I think on my social accounts, I've not, like, shared that much recently.
But you're on here every single week talking about it.
But that's my point, like, I know that I'm doing that. I think there's other people out there as well who are in a...
I think something like that is actually... The reason I don't like that argument personally is because I feel like it's a kind of get out of jail free card. And it's what people say all the time when it's like, yes, true, there may be some people who are, you know, behind the scenes making donations, signing petitions, etc., talking to politicians, whatever. But if you're doing all of that, why not also show visible support? Because you don't know what the impact of that could be. Do you know what I mean? And like, this is very much, as I say, a war of consensus as well, you know? And I often feel like people make that excuse. There may be some people who say that in earnest and they mean it. But there's also some people, I think the vast majority of people will say that when they don't want to be scrutinized for their lack of action. People will be like, oh, well, you don't know. And it's a famous line that celebrities say all the time. You don't know what I'm doing behind closed doors, blah, 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 blah. And it's like...
Celebrities, I feel like, is a bit different because...
Oh, for sure, because they have so much power and influence.
Yeah, they have a literal platform. Yeah, I think definitely when it comes to celebrities, like...
I think overall, Carlos is right. Like, for the movement and for the cause, yeah, that it is a net positive because it is raising awareness, it's raising sympathies. For me, I would just say the people who have shared the image and not previously engaged or, outwardly shared things, I think question your own activism. Question how performative it is. Question why you've chosen to share this particular image and not any other ones. Question why now, question yourself.
That is true, actually, because I'm kind of like, if there's someone out there who is like doing their bit behind the scenes and isn't sharing anything on social media and then also hasn't shared this particular image, then fair enough. But if there's someone who claims that they have been doing their bit but then hasn't shared anything up until this point, then like you're saying, it is a bit like, well, why now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is applicable to who it's applicable to. Do you know what I mean?
I think ultimately, though, like, I think it's fair enough for us to discuss it this week because it is, like, it's something that is a topic of discussion and it's relevant to now. But I think everyone involved needs to kind of put this to rest now. I think that's where the problem can lie. If there's people out there who are purely now focusing on, well, why are you sharing this image now, blah, 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 instead of shifting their focus towards the main issue at hand, which is, of course, Palestinian liberation. If you're focusing on who didn't share an image,
I think the point of questioning your activism is so that you can be a better ally moving forward. You know, like, the point isn't to sit there and berate yourself like, oh my God, I'm such a bad person, I haven't shared anything before, blah, 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 blah. The point is question why you've shared this and not other things, and then kind of maneuver yourself to do better, basically.
Yeah, you know? I did see an argument as well. If you see, like, Jason on Twitter, is like Jason.
Yeah.
He made the argument that he was saying that also it is like performative, but ultimately this is net positive. And also he pointed out that he sees the difference between this and black squares, in that the whole point of posting a black square was for this really vague idea of, oh, we're going to sit and listen.
Oh, I saw him. Yeah,
we're going to sit and listen. And also, obviously, people were taking up the BLM hashtags with that, which was, like, pointless.
Yeah.
And whereas this thing is slightly different in the sense that at the end of the day,
tangible goal.
Yeah, it's stop the genocide.
But this is my point, is that that particular image doesn't point to any of that.
Yeah.
That particular image doesn't have a single line about Palestinian liberation, doesn't say anything. Like, in terms of showing support, in terms of showing solidarity, it is the single easiest thing that anyone could do. Post the most generic, it's like the safest kind of way to show solidarity. And the point about being an ally for Palestinian liberation is that you can't do it, you know, with the prioritizing your own safety. You have to put your neck on the line a little bit here. Do you know what I mean? Like, you have to be vocal about it. You have to express dissent. You have to cause disruption. That's the only way anything is ever going to happen. You know, like, posting a very palatable kind of cartoon generated picture that doesn't actually name the project of Palestinian liberation, let alone point signpost to any resources, etc. That's a bit of a problem. So my point is that if you are someone who hasn't shared anything and you have shared something now, question within yourself why this might not be the best form of activism. And if you have shown solidarity for Palestine, if that's what your intention was by sharing this image, then continue to do so.
Yeah.
And the best way to do that is to signpost like resources and petitions, etc.
Yeah. Did you see the counter image that started being shared?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Where were your eyes on October 7th? With a very, I would argue, racially insensitive image.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, but the thing is like, and this is the thing that really annoys me about, like, sometimes I go through, like, you know, the official state of Israel's their Twitter, because sometimes I'm like, let me see, like, what, because I do try to understand, you know. So I'm like, let me see, like, what they're on. Let me see what their stance is. Let me see how they think and what their beliefs are. And it's kind of like, sometimes it's insane to me that, like, it's the official Twitter account of a country tweeting in this way. Like, it's like almost unhinged.
And also the fact that they block people as well.
It's like crazy. They'll literally call people out. Like, they will single people out and call people out. It's actually insane. But on top of that, it's like so many of their kind of, what would you call that, like, social media trends, they hijack from from the kind of Palestinian movement, or like they do it as a retort to the Palestinian movement. It's almost like they can't have their own standalone kind of movement.
It's really interesting when you see that, but then also on the flip side of things, how we've seen so much of the massacre and horrible things that have happened, we've seen that Israel has accused Palestine of it, and then actually it's turned out
they've done it themselves,
they've gone on to do it.
Exactly, like the on October 7th, one of the kind of biggest uproars about that was the 40 beheaded babies, which was kind of spread on worldwide global news, which was used to set the tone of the war, to manufacture consent for, you know, renewed attacks on Gazans, that was set to kind of create a wave of public opinion and consensus that was shared without reserve, without verification. And it was only then, when it was had gone to be verified, that we'd realized that actually it wasn't true. It was not true. And yet, 8 months in, the images that we're seeing out of Gaza are of beheaded children and headless and limbless children. The same image that Israel had evoked from the world in order to manufacture consent from them is actually a reality that Gazans are going through, you know?
Yeah.
So it is like, it's just, it's like such a cruel irony.
Okay. We're going for a standing vibe now.
I have pins and needles in my leg randomly. Yeah. I don't know why.
Are you going to stay up there? Because if so, I'll join you.
Maybe for like 5 minutes or so.
Okay, I won't join you then. But I'm going to go and turn the camera on and off.
What's going on with the camera?
It's about to run out.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What's our next segment?
Well, you know what that's going to be. We can't start it though without...
camera. Yeah. Sorry, guys. Technical difficulties once again.
It's not even technical difficulties. It's just technical full stop. No, I am gonna stand up.
Oh, why do I have pins and needles? You know when you get to that point of pins and needles, where like it hurts to wriggle your toes, like it's so tickly, like it hurts.
I think that's quite an ADHD thing that you're wanting to wiggle your toes as well.
Really? Do you not do that?
I don't have an expressed desire to.
Oh, like, interesting.
Anyway, it's time for Bad Vibes
Island. Have you convinced yourself that you're pitch perfect?
What do you mean convince myself? Right, name me any note, I can tell you.
Next.
You know, like Rachel, where she's like on the X Factor, when she's like, say any, name me any song, I can sing it. But I'm literally like, name me any note, I can sing it for you. Play me any note.
I bet you can. Exactly. But like, you know what? Next time we're on air, I'm gonna record it, because
I do know what you mean, because I know I listened to it back on the video recording like last week or the week before, and I was like, wow, actually that is out of tune.
It's, you know what? Very it is? Bad. It's because you have headphones.
Yeah, it's because I can't hear it. How do the singers do it? Do they like? I don't understand.
It's because he has headphones in and he doesn't realise how bad it is.
We try again.
No.
What do you mean no? They don't want to see us win.
Stop, because I'll do it. Bad Vibes
Island. That was all right.
The thing is, maybe someone can be like technically in tune but still not sound good.
You know, that is me, definitely. In a different world, I have a career as a singer, but my tone just isn't there, unfortunately.
It's not. Sorry, Carlos.
It's fine. I'd come to terms with it, but I haven't. I still have my dreams. But anyway, Bad Vibes Island. Now, before we get into this, we just need to let you know, as we're going to continue to let you know for the next month, that we are obviously officially in general election period from the run-up of the 30th of May right up until the 4th of July, I believe.
Oh, is that what they actually did?
Yeah, it's like literally this period. And there are certain regulations that we have to follow, as we're obviously broadcasting on DAB Radio. So that, with that in mind, just want to let you know that when we're discussing issues of politics and stuff relating to the general election, we're by no means telling you that you should or shouldn't do anything in regards to how you cast your vote. Everything we're saying is our opinion and the show's opinion, rather than that of Pi Radio. And yeah, we are going to do our best to remain impartial in the sense that we're going to offer separate schools of thought before then putting our own cases forward.
Yep.
With that being said, this issue that we're going to discuss this week is in relation to a number of Labour candidates for the general election that have had their ability to stand thrown into question. Also want to make it clear that we're in no way questioning whether or not the ability of these people to stand or the pros and cons and whatever. We're just talking about how these people have been treated, in our opinion. You sitting now?
Yeah, I'm sitting.
Right. Let us just sit down. Get comfortable.
Guys, I'm getting old.
Yeah. Not even going to deny it. Yeah. Right. Well.
So,
right.
Labour.
Yeah. So, I think there's two people in particular that I wanted to speak about this week. I think we should start off with the one and only Diane Abbott. For those who don't know, Diane Abbott is the Labour MP for Hackney down in London. She was the first black female MP
ever.
Elected, yep, ever in the UK, which in recent as the 80s, I think it was the late 80s, I think 87 maybe. She I hate to use the same terminology as Keir Starmer, but she is a trailblazer. She is an amazing person who has stood for so much in her 70 years of life.
We've spoken before specifically about Diane Abbott and the treatment of Diane Abbott kind of in British politics and British body politic at large. And we have characterised it through misogynoir. We spoke about particularly the, can't remember the guy's name, the largest Tory party donor.
Frank Hester.
Yeah, him, Frank Hester. Kind of coming out and making absolutely abhorrent comments about wanting to shoot wanting to shoot Diane Abbott?
Yeah, it's like, I don't hate all black women, but when I hear or look at Diane Abbott, it was very violent language used in reference to her.
Extremely so. And kind of this, and what he said, and the fact that he was able to say it and kind of get away with it with absolutely no repercussion is a comment on kind of firstly the misogynoir that is very deeply sewn into the fabric of British politics and British society, but also specifically a comment on how Diane Abbott herself is a victim of that.
Yeah.
And I really personally believe that the way that she has been treated by the Labour Party recently is a comment on that as well.
Yeah, so to give context as to what we're talking about, I mean, there's been various instances in the past anyway, yeah, but the most recent one is that Labour withdrew the whip from Diane Abbott last year in April, so April 2023, following the publication of an article that she wrote for The Observer. The reason why there was controversy over what she said in this article is because she made reference to how Irish, Jewish and traveller people don't necessarily experience racism, they more experience prejudice. Now, I've got the direct quote of what she said, so I'm just going to read that out fully analyse it. Tomiwa Owolade claims that Irish, Jewish and traveller people all suffer from racism. Racism in Britain is not a black and white issue. It's far more complicated. And then Diane Abbott goes on to say, they undoubtedly experience prejudice. This is similar to racism, and the two words are often used as if they are interchangeable. It is true that many types of white people with points of difference, such as redheads, can experience this prejudice, but they are not all their lives subject to racism. In pre-civil rights America, Irish people, Jewish people and travellers were not required to sit at the back of the bus. In apartheid South Africa, these groups were allowed to vote. At the height of slavery, there were no white-seeming people manacled on the slave ships. Now, for me personally, in regards to her saying that white people from minority backgrounds don't experience racism, they experience prejudice. To me personally, in my opinion, that's fine to say that it's factual, right?
Because it's factual. Guys, I'm so... Go on, Carlos, because I got things to say. Yeah,
the only thing that I can possibly find at fault there is I don't necessarily care for the fact that she brings up redheads, for example, because whilst we can make the argument that white people from minority backgrounds, such as Irish people, Jewish people, or traveller people, don't experience racism, they experience prejudice, I think to bring it onto the same level as the obvious bullying that many people who have ginger hair experience, I think to make that comparison is a bit insensitive, because ultimately it's still a very serious issue.
Yeah.
That being said, that to me is the only thing that's wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go for it, Lima.
That comment is more kind of like careless than it is anti-Semitic, because this now is actually the issue that came from it. So she released this article, and then kind of the backlash was that it was anti-Semitic. That's the label that people were using to describe what she had written, to the point where she had to take a course on anti-Semitic awareness.
Yeah.
Now, to me, that is insane. When we have spoken on the show about real life examples of anti-Semitism, just a fortnight ago, we sat here and we spoke about real attacks, like almost fatal attacks in the name of anti-Semitism. To say that Jewish people who are white, or at least white passing, don't face racism in the same way, how is that anti-Semitic in any sense of the word? She has not made any attack on the Jewish people. She has not made any attack on the Jewish faith. She has not spoken in a derogatory manner about Jewish people or the Jewish faith. How is that? I don't understand. And for me, the way that I see it is that because in this kind of time where accusations of anti-Semitism have been almost weaponized, especially in kind of, we've seen it. I know this was like before October the 7th, but we have seen it since October the 7th, where claims of anti-Semitism have been weaponized to silence, for example, like pro-Palestinian sentiment and voices. I think that this is kind of like another example of that, because that's kind of a way that they'd use to silence, like Corbyn, for example. Like Corbyn was basically smeared with accusations of anti-Semitism, and it's a problem that they had kind of found within the Labour Party. And I think that it's
doubting that it probably does
exist. For whatever kind of real findings of anti-Semitism, like we're in solidarity of that. But my point is that it then makes it very easy for people to rely on that laurel. Do you get what I'm saying? It makes it very easy then for people to just be like, to kind of have a blanket accusation of anti-Semitism for anyone who's associated with the Labour Party, because they might have had anti-Semitism in other kind of periods or whatever. And I really believe that that's what's happened here to Diane Abbott. Moreover, the thing that she's actually said, to build on what Carlos has said, that it's not actually wrong. Like, we have to understand that she's speaking from the perspective of a black woman. And what she's saying is absolutely right, that not everybody who is a victim of any kind of discrimination or prejudice is equally victim to all kinds of, you know, discrimination and prejudice. There exists a racial hierarchy. There exists a global racial hierarchy. The reason that historians point to the Atlantic slave trade as, you know, one of the most defining watersheds in human history ever is because that created kind of racial sciences and racial hierarchies that still govern the entire world today. To act as though that, you know, Irish travellers or that white Jewish people experience racism on the same level as, like, you know, brown people or black people is absolutely insane. And it's kind of very scary that she can't say this without critique, because ultimately the way that I look at it is that if you can't name these issues, if you can't enumerate these issues, how do you ever expect to deal with it? If we can't name the fact that there is a racial hierarchy in British society, if we can't enumerate the ways that various, you know, minority groups are victim to various types of prejudices and extents of discrimination, how do we ever expect to tackle it properly?
Yeah.
You know?
It's because for certain groups, there's a difference, right? Because the whole idea of racism and race itself, it's all based on external appearance.
That's exactly it. Racialization is a visual project based on your phenotype, your physical appearance. And this is what people do not understand about racialization, is that there is actually no such thing as like white passing. If you look white, you are white. Your race and your ethnicity are very, very different things. You could be like, you know, you could be, for example, like a white Moroccan person. Your ethnicity could be Moroccan. If you look white, you are white. That is exactly how racialization works. People don't understand that. And that doesn't necessarily mean to say then that people who are white don't face other types of discrimination. For example, white Jewish people do face anti-Semitism. Irish travellers, for example, do face prejudice and discrimination as well. You know, that's not the conversation that she was having. She was talking about a racial hierarchy. And in the racial hierarchy, black people are at the bottom of it. There's a reason why we name anti-blackness. We have a name for it. We don't say anti-brownness. We don't say anti-Jewishness. Like, anti-brownness is an institutionally kind of named thing, you know?
Yeah, I think the thing is as well, the example you can use is if a white Jewish person or a white Irish person walks into a bar along with a brown person or a black person, the brown person or black person is immediately going to be judged on their appearance. Whereas more time than not, unless they're wearing like
something like a kippah or something like that.
It's almost like they have a coming out. They have the opportunity to present themselves as I am this.
Exactly. And like, for example, I have a very good friend who's Ukrainian. Like, he's from Ukraine. He immigrated. He has like, you know, a very distinct like Ukrainian accent. And he used to say to me, like, if you and me were sat on a tube in London and neither of us opened our mouth, you would get hate and I wouldn't. But you're the one born here. Like, you're I mean, he's also British now, but like, he's like, you're the one born here. You're the one who's ever like, if we're kind of following the logic of, you know, xenophobia or whatever, it would follow that he should be the victim of it, not me, because I'm born here and he's not. He's the immigrant. And yet, if neither of us opened our mouth, just visibly, because I am othered because of my race, I am more likely to be victim of that kind of prejudice and discrimination, you know? And once again, how do we ever tackle that? How do we ever tackle the kind of real nuances of racism if we can't even name the fact that there exists a racial hierarchy?
Regardless, we've obviously gone into now as to what Dan said in her article back in April 2023. And why we don't necessarily feel that she said anything incorrect or wrong. That being said, Labour withdrew the whip for her back in April.
And also, like, also, do you know why I say that they weaponized like the charge of anti-Semitism? Is because she didn't have to do any course on like awareness on discrimination against travellers. Like, that was completely written out of the conversation.
That's true, actually.
Completely written out of the conversation, you know?
Yeah, no anti-Irish or anti-traveller.
None at all. And, like, that's also very well documented. Like, discrimination against travellers is extremely well documented, you know? And yet there was no... That was completely written out of the conversation, you know? And that, again, leads me personally to believe that it was kind of like a bogus charge to kind of as a means to push her out of the Labour Party. Yeah. That's what I believe personally.
So the whip was withdrawn April 2023. In September 2023, Abbott came out and said that she believes that as a black woman, I will not get a fair hearing from this Labour leadership. Yep. The Labour Party National Executive Committee concluded its inquiry into her comments in December 23. And issued her with a formal warning for, quote unquote, engaging in conduct that was, in the opinion of the NEC, prejudicial?
Yeah.
Why can't I read? Prejudicial and grossly detrimental to the Labour Party. She was then allegedly, made to take anti-Semitism training. And there have been arguments put forward, I'm not sure as to how true they are, that the reason why she was not reinstated as a Labour MP is because she didn't take the training up until February. We've already discussed why we think that she shouldn't have had to take the training in the first
place.
Also, I
want to point out that, kind of to support my personal opinion, that this is like a targeted attack rather than a genuine, an earnest response to like an earnest example of anti-Semitism. feminism is that I really believe that they are making an example out of her because, say, for example, there is someone in earnest who was upset by what she said, because there might be, and I'm not going to kind of
discredit that.
However, it is in the kind of wider context of things, not by any stretch of the imagination, the worst thing that any acting kind of Labour MP has said. Not even close. In fact, recently, Keir Starmer has given a safe seat of County Durham to a Labour MP now who had made problematic comments. A tweet of his had resurfaced where this man had said, "Are Jews still considered politically black?" That, I would say, is way more insensitive than what Diane Abbott said.
Yeah, and Diane Abbott was talking from an academic perspective. Like,
exactly. And yet Keir Starmer has given this man a safe seat in County Durham.
Well,
And chose to make an example out of Diane Abbott. Like, it's just not very consistent, is it? Like, all I'm doing is pointing out consistencies.
Yeah. Well, it brings us to this week. So obviously, Diane had been had the whip suspended or withdrawn since April 2023. She had the whip reinstated, I think, at the start of this week, but it had not been made clear whether or not she was going to be able to stand as a Labour candidate. And there was a load of back and forth, lots of people thinking, oh, well, the fact she's had the whip reinstated but hasn't had the approval from Labour suggests that she's going to have to stand as an independent. And Keir was saying, oh, we're still coming to a decision, until finally Keir said yesterday, so on Friday the 31st of May, oh, yeah, she's able to stand as a Labour candidate. Now, obviously...
Oh, he said that yesterday?
Yeah, literally. Yeah, so yesterday it is confirmed that she can stand as a Labour candidate. But obviously...
So what was the reason for him now changing his mind?
Exactly. Well, I don't know what the reason was for leaving her in limbo for this long. And
because
then
if your reason for, like, taking the whip away from her was genuine, then it should not be something that you could just go back on. It seems like he is just kind of very arbitrarily making decisions based on kind of like
like it's based on weighing up, okay, would I rather take the wrath of the people that believe that she was genuinely anti-Semitic, or would I lose the votes of the people that will continue to vote her if she runs as an independent?
Exactly. And it's like whichever the right answer is, he doesn't care about the people. In my opinion. You know, the fact that he could kind of like just change his decision almost arbitrarily, but actually probably for his own political gain, it doesn't show any integrity and conviction.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, there's a couple of other examples as well as the one that you mentioned. So Barry Sherman, who made a significantly anti-Semitic comment, he apologised and no further action was taken. Neil Coyle made racially disparaging remarks to an actual journalist, as well as also having a separate sexual harassment claim put against him.
God.
He was suspended, but after apologising, he actually had his... he was actually able to... it was said that he can stand as a Labour candidate before Diane Abbott was... Even though, obviously, you compare the two, it might have been that Neil Coyle, it happened longer ago. But when you compare the fact that he's made an actual racist comment to the face of a journalist and had a sexual harassment claim, yet he has been able to come back and stand for Labour before Diane Abbott has.
So this is exactly my point. Like, they're just making an example out of her. It's not that it's not like an earnest response to something that she did genuinely wrong.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, the reason that they are choosing her to make an example out of is because she's a black woman. If we look at the four other MPs who had been banned from standing,
or it's been suggested that they will be. So two of them have been. I think Absana Begum is like not confirmed anything. So speculation, some that have confirmed.
Out of the four of them, three of them are women of colour, one black woman, two Asian women, and one gay man who is the first person to declare his first MP to declare his HIV positive status.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying anything, but it's not kind of lost on me that these are people who kind of belong to identities that have historically been discriminated against, especially in the kind of political sphere. You know, that's not lost on me, that context. Not that I'm drawing any conclusions, just naming the context.
Yeah. There have been accusations, like I said, that there is a supposed leftist purge that is happening. But
I personally think that that would make a lot of sense. Historically, politically, it is a kind of very well-established trend where, you know, kind of party leaders, in order to defeat factionism, they do get rid of people belonging to factions that are not theirs, to bring in people that are more loyal to them, to kind of, you know, as I say, combat factionism. But it is kind of, in my opinion, a democratic threat. You know, yeah.
Well, solidarity with Diane Abbott from us.
Absolutely, as always.
Yeah, obviously she is now running as Labour MP, but I can't imagine this past week especially has been a pleasant experience. Bearing in mind that she is one of the, like, she was at one time, and I'm sure is still at the top of MPs that get the highest amount of abuse, like, online as well.
Seismically so. Yeah. Like, wasn't it like there was a point where it was like half, or at least more than half of. Kind of,
yeah, I think in the 2017 election especially.
Yeah.
Yeah. Solidarity.
But also, like, listen, Diane, Auntie, like, leave the Labour Party. Stand as independent. The people love you, in my opinion. You know,
this is Halima's opinion. She is not telling anyone.
I'm not telling anyone what to do. I'm just saying, if I was Diane, what I would do was I would kind of like really just cut my losses with the Labour Party and just stand as an independent, because
based on our opinion of how they have treated her.
If I was Diane, this is just my personal opinion, just to stress that again. Because the people love her. Like, she has, you know, a real, real stronghold, you know, in Hackney and also like just throughout London. And it speaks to her as, you know, a politician and kind of the relationships that she's been able to build with communities.
Taking a small breather now, did you see the person that is accusing us on Instagram of not knowing what gerrymandering means?
I didn't really read the chat properly. I can't remember. I was doing something, but yeah. Carlos is very upset about
I'm very
this.
It's my new favorite word, and now you're telling me that I can't use it. Like, what is going on?
Out of all the problematic comments that we get, and trust me, we get some real problematic comments, this is the one that you decide to bring to air.
It's because also, I get what this person is saying on Instagram. It's that traditionally the use of the word gerrymandering is in regards to how people draw like constituency lines as to be in their favour. So someone might like package people more into one area.
Okay, that's like the literal definition.
It's the literal definition. But literally, if you look it up, gerrymandering is basically used, it basically means manipulating in general.
Yeah.
And also Jacob Rees-Mogg used it, and he is...
He's a politician.
Yeah, is so... Not one that
we would personally support.
I don't know. This is a very dangerous world.
Not one that we would personally advocate for, but a politician nevertheless.
But also, it was kind of like, the whole point of that post was to say, look, students, you might not even want to vote, but if you do, please make sure that you're registered at both your home and terms and address, because it's better to have the option to be able to rather than come to the day and you realize that. So to comment that, I'm just like, come on, like, that's not the point of like stop
splitting
hairs.
Yeah, but I feel like that's just so like so perfectly anecdotal of the internet. Like, you'll be talking about like the most important thing, and people will come on here to be like it's crazy.
It's the fact that they preceded it with not to be that person. I was like, don't be that person.
Don't.
How about that?
Yeah.
Right, let me go and turn the camera on off again.
Carlos was really personally offended by that.
It's because I just...
Sometimes when I fancy a laugh, like, I go on like our almost like viral videos and just read through the comments. I get some real horrible comments, not gonna lie. I get some really nice comments as well, but I get some real horrible comments, gosh. What you get for being like a loud brown woman.
My worst one has been called Jabba the Hutt.
What? Who said that? Oh, wait, I can't remember that.
The one where we were talking about anti-Semitic stuff and then people were commenting like, what are they talking about? Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
Great. But Also, you know what's hilarious is I've given up trying to keep up with the comments on our most viral video, which has surpassed 3 million views now.
Oh, the one that Halima hates.
The one of the attempted burglary. But it's just, I've given up looking at the comments because it's literally like so many. But if you go on there, it is very much like it's just turned into a massive argument of UK versus America. Because obviously loads of people have been like, oh, well, this is America. She would have a gun. She'd be able to do blah, 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 rather than a broom. Of course, chalk crushing. Like, I'm just like, how is this the argument? Like, this is just meant to be a funny clip, like, and you're having a
it's interesting a sometimes. It's interesting to just kind of, like, put something out there on the internet and just see, let people... 172,000 likes.
Yeah. 3.2 million views, I believe.
Counting. My God, look at the state of me jump scare. You guys are... Why can't you make one of the videos where I look now? I look put together most of our videos.
Well, you know what? I'm going to put one out soon. I need to finish editing it of you talking about Zayn's new album. And you were done up for that.
Okay.
So hopefully.
Gosh, hopefully so annoying. Make up for it. But, oh my God.
Yeah, it's growing exponentially.
That is like literally last week we just hit.
Well, yeah, because the other day, like, you, Simran was like, oh, we're on 4.2K, and then I was like, 42,000 Blazer. But, yeah, now we're at 4.4, which is obviously...
God, like, all it takes is one viral video, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, hope it continues like this, but, yeah. And also, like, it is, like, bothering me how
5K soon, come on.
Yeah, each week we are like, oh, like, this about our phone, but honestly, it is just genuine because, like, we're not used to this. So that is why each week we're like, ooh, like, followers.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. And not that we don't deserve it.
Yeah.
We should have been had these numbers.
Yeah. Agreed. Right. Going back to the serious stuff, whilst some might argue that it's a positive that Diane has been able to stand as a Labour MP, as that's what she wants to do, that hasn't been the case for Chingford and Woodford Greens previously standing MP, Faiza Shaheen. So to give a bit of context on Faiza, she was the MP for Chingford and Woodford Green since December 2019. So she actually took a Tory safe seat in 2019. Bear in mind, 2019 was obviously the election that went completely wrong for Labour. So the fact that she was able to do that and take that from Ian Duncan Smith, of all people, as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a huge achievement on her part. Mm.
So the people want her.
Yeah.
The people really, they were really voting for her.
Yeah. She had a meeting with the Labour's NEC, the National Executive Committee, on Tuesday of this week. About 14 tweets that she had liked that were deemed as being problematic. She had the meeting, thought nothing of it, and then on Wednesday, the 29th of May, she was out canvassing because she'd already started her political campaign. She was out like going around handing
leaflets.
This woman
has like just given birth like what, 2 months ago?
I think it was in January, but yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
a few months ago.
Still like very young, less
she's got
than
a
6 months.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Young baby, she's like, literally carrying around and everything. So on Wednesday the 29th, she was out canvassing, like trying to get people like to vote for her again. And her phone suddenly starts blowing up, and she finds out because Labour had actually briefed the press before doing. Oh, getting there. I was wondering, like, for context, Halima's just got up and walked towards the door. I was like, are you going somewhere?
People have gone and we need air in here.
Yeah, it's true. Right, so Faiza was out canvassing, trying to get people to vote for her. Her phone starts blowing up and she's like, what's going on? And it is actually because Labour had briefed the press before even telling her that she was not going to be standing as the Labour candidate in 2024. She was then called up for an interview on BBC Newsnight, which she went on, and she said to them, literally, I found out like an hour ago that I'm not going to be selected as the Labour candidate. And when she said it's based on a number of tweets that I have liked, like 14 tweets over the past like 10 years or so. And bear in mind also it's liked rather than actually written as well. And this is the reason why I am not going to be able to
stand. Do we know what the tweets are? Well, I think I read something about it.
I've got some of the tweets here so we can go through them and understand exactly how they've come to this conclusion. So I think the oldest one was one from Griffin Carpenter, who stood as the Green Party candidate for Hackney Council back in March 2014. Bearing in mind, this was before she had even joined the Labour Party. She liked this back in 2014, and also Griffin was an old work colleague of her. Yeah, apparently this is something that's contributed towards her not being able to stand as a Labour MP. Also in 2014, she liked a tweet where a Twitter user shared a message in support of boycotting Israeli goods and argued that the tactic had worked against apartheid South Africa. Again, I personally don't see
what's wrong with that. What on earth?
She then liked a tweet made by Worthing Green Party in 2019. This was in early 2019, so this was before she was even an elected Labour MP. Mm-hmm. It was basically just a protest that they were doing that was actually all positive as well. There was nothing wrong with it. That's been like brought to this meeting that she went to.
What?
She liked, do you remember Majid, the who was mayor of Sheffield?
Yeah.
And he also was a member of European Parliament.
Yeah.
So he like tweeted when it was his final week. Obviously he's part of the Green Party as well, or was part of the Green Party. He tweeted in his final week final week of being an MEP, let's make sure the last 5 days count. I'm grateful for this opportunity. He liked that. Apparently that's an issue.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Then
wait, hang on, but have they not given reasoning for why each of these things are issues?
Well, obviously we were not in that meeting, so we don't know. But
I'm looking at that and I'm like, I'm an imaginative person, and all the imagination in my brain, I cannot imagine why that might possibly be a problem.
Mm. The next tweet was former Labour MP John McDonnell. He spoke out against the suspension of Naomi Wimborne Idrissi, who is the co-founder of Jewish Voice for Labour and former vice chair of Chingford and Woodford Green constituency Labour Party. So she obviously will have had connections to Pfizer. She was suspended for making comments in a meeting where she said she was uncomfortable seeing fellow members suspended over accusations of anti-Semitism.
Oh my God. And this is coming from a Jewish woman herself.
Exactly. And yeah. Next, she liked a Channel 4 tweet where Jeremy Corbyn was saying that it's up to him as to what he decides to do, as in it's up to Keir, in light of being asked whether Keir should step down after Labour lost the Hartlepool by-election. So it's not even, again, it's not even saying anything. Jeremy wasn't even saying like, oh, I hate Keir Starmer, blah, blah, blah.
Is there more?
Yeah, of course there's more. This next one, you're going to want to get into it. So this one in particular was a point of contention for a lot of people. So in 2021, the Labour Muslim Network released a statement regarding Labour quietly lifting Trevor Phillips' suspension behind closed doors following Islamophobia allegations. And Pfizer quote, this was the one that Pfizer actually wrote. She quote tweeted this saying, "The hierarchy of racism that exists within the Labour Party, society and the media is so blatant and so tiring. The message is loud and clear. Muslims and the prejudices we face don't matter. Let's see how many non-Muslim Labour MPs who rely on our votes speak out against this." So it's literally...
She's doing her job.
She's doing her job. She's
speaking up about political matters. Also, if you know Wood Green, Chingford, like Wood Green especially has a very, very high like Muslim population.
Yeah, and also she's speaking literally as a Muslim herself, like about the party that she's a part of, saying the fact that the Labour have silently lifted the suspension of someone who has had allegations of Islamophobia, what that means for her. Like, she should be able to say that and should be able to... Yeah.
It just sounds like censorship. It's insane to me. Like, I'm looking at these tweets, and it's like, I cannot, as I said, with all the imagination in my brain, muster up any kind of explanation as to why any of that might have been problematic in any kind of way. Especially, you know, when we've just spoken about in the conversation with Diane Abbott, there are people out here who are saying absolutely heinous comments and not facing repercussions. Carlos gave a list of examples. Another one has come up. Trevor McDonald. Trevor Phillips. Allegations of Islamophobia. And then what? They've lifted the suspension on him. And
this
yet,
was back in 2021, so I'm not
sure. But my point is that this has been happening. There have been politicians who have been saying very explicitly contentious and problematic and even kind of discriminatory things, who have not faced either any repercussions or kind of very superficial repercussions that have not withstood. And yet Pfizer, who has liked a number of tweets that to the naked eye do not seem problematic at all, and in one instance spoken out against a very, very well established trend of Islamophobia, has now been banned from standing. It is a very similar thing to Diane Abbott, where I believe that they are, my opinion, they are kind of like just getting rid of potential kind of factions and strong MPs. We have already established that Pfizer had won the seat from a Tory MP, especially in an election where Labour had done especially poorly. So I can hazard that she is potentially a quite popular MP.
Yeah.
And she could probably kind of sway public support.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of, in me kind of knowing how political tactics works, in my opinion, would say that this is an example of the Labour leadership getting rid of kind of what they might deem to be potential threats to their strongholds within the Labour Party, and also because of the fact that she is an Asian Muslim woman, making an example out of her.
Yeah, and also due to the fact that she is very strongly pro-Palestine, so right. and anti-Israel as a result of that. So these final couple of tweets are in relation to that. So there was a Telegraph article about her titled Labour Candidate Called Israel an Apartheid State, and she quote tweeted that saying, "Have you ever been affected by domestic policy? Also, I have been active on Palestine for 20 years and will be so if I make it into government. I'm doing the best thing I can do to support. Otherwise, there will be another MP who will say nothing or worse."
Yep.
So again, nothing wrong with that in my opinion.
Yep.
The one that has been brought up that was discussed on Newsnight as well, that's the people are arguing, or that it's been put forward as the most quote unquote problematic tweet, is she liked this tweet where it's someone is giving a take on in reference to the Israel lobby, and they've also posted a skit video from I think it's an American show. So the skit makes light of the difficulties of criticizing Israel's behavior as a Jewish person.
Hello. We've just heard of one example of a Jewish woman being suspended for talking about bogus anti-Semitism claims.
Mm.
Like, it's uncanny. It's actually uncanny.
I think the line that people are finding issue with is that basically in this take that this tweet, in terms of the written content, they're basically making they're basically saying that the Israel lobby is in professional organizations, and that basically the argument is that it supports this trope of Jewish people basically being everywhere and controlling everything. That's the argument. Like... However, Ash Sarkar from Novara Media has come out and said, actually, she disagreed, because Pfizer came out on a news line and said, like, I understand, like, why people would find issue with that tweet. Like, I understand. But Ash has come forward and said, actually, I don't think there's anything wrong with this tweet because it mentions the Israel lobby. Exactly. It does not say anything about Jewish people, Jewish lobby, Jewish finances.
Exactly. And also the Israel lobby is a factual thing, right? Like, their political donations, their kind of political involvements in certain governments is a factual. Pfizer hasn't come forward and been like, I'm going to make up this conspiracy to demonize Jewish people and to play into the anti-Semitic tropes. This is a factual thing, you know? Like, you could trace donations that have been made by certain Israeli lobbies to certain politicians and certain governments. You can see that for yourself. It's factual. She hasn't made that up.
Yeah.
Like, and to kind of acknowledge the existence of that, I don't understand. How can that be a wrong thing?
All this to say, I mean, obviously, I don't think that was all 14 tweets, but we can get the gist of the kind of, in our opinion, very weak argument that
bogus.
There is.
In my opinion, completely bogus.
For
absolutely
her
bogus.
Not to stand as a Labour candidate, and also for her to be, for it to be done in such a brash way as well, like, literally.
With absolutely no respect. Like, to kind of let the media and the TV know before she finds out, is like, it is such a level of disrespect, you know? And this isn't even, like, a political opinion. This is just basic human decency, you know?
When asked about it, Keir said he wants the highest quality candidates.
This woman won a Labour seat from the Tory party in an election where Labour had done awfully.
Yeah, and it was something.
How is she not
she
a
had
strong
like
candidate?
A really high vote share or some kind of record breaking thing. It was
how
very
is
impressive.
How is she not a strong candidate? She's someone that you should want for the Labour Party because you know she'll have like a strong support base.
In our opinion. But
well, I guess
clearly,
I guess that's exactly the problem, right?
Yeah. Well,
Once again, I personally hope, and if I was her, I personally would just step away from
well,
the
she
party.
Said there's no way back for her into the party now, which is fair enough, in my opinion.
I hope she stands as an independent because it looks like she has the support of her constituency. So I hope it's not the last that we see of her.
The thing is, I just don't know how that works, like whether you need to have, you know what I mean?
Anyone can stand as an independent.
But is there like a time period, like period that you're able, do you know what I mean?
Oh, I don't think so.
I don't know. Just because I don't know, but. Yeah, I mean,
that would have been extremely sinister if they.
Well, if it is, then yeah, the fact they've like left at the last minute and everything, yeah.
Well, I hope that's not the case.
Yeah, I don't know in terms of that, but yeah, solidarity with Pfizer, and I think more than anything, please just try to not let this affect, your first year of life with your newborn as well, because proper bad vibes, but
bad vibes,
yeah. Let's see, because honestly, when this election was announced, and obviously we got like the warning about like, look, you have to remain impartial on air, etc., which I think we have done for the most part. We haven't like said anything that's incorrect. We haven't like we'd offered alternative arguments to different stuff. We haven't told you to vote for anyone or to do anyone to do anything. But when this first came up, I was like, you know what? I reckon this is actually gonna be fine because the way that we're feeling right now, I don't think that we're particularly pro or against, like what we were against people. I don't think we're particularly pro anyone, but obviously a week has passed and all this has happened, so we'll see what transpires.
I personally, this is my personal opinion, and I've spoken about this on the show before, I'm just in a complete state of disillusionment with parliamentary politics. I'm in a state of just complete mistrust. I can't in good conscience like put my weight behind any kind of political party.
And that's what we call being impartial.
Yeah, that's really impartiality. I don't like any of them personally.
Not that we're telling you not to vote, you just do whatever you want.
Yeah,
but
me personally, I'm just really struggling to kind of engage at the minute.
What are you having for your tea, Halima?
It's my cousin's birthday.
Oh yeah,
birthday. So I don't know. Oh, I was supposed to make a dessert, guys, and I didn't because I had my nephews and nieces yesterday. Oh my god, have you like are you ever really around kids? Not really.
No, not really. It's weird. Like, I don't know why, because even when you take away the whole, like, not necessarily being around my Asian family that much, like, you still would have thought that I would have been exposed to someone with a baby by now, but it's been so long.
Really? Oh, yeah. That's insane for me, because, like, the baby turnover in my family, and this is without any exaggeration, it's every 6 to 8 months. Like, like we have at least, like, at least 2 babies every year. And hand on my heart, that's not an exaggeration. So we have, like, many kids in my family. And, like, I love kids. I love children. And they love me. I love being that fun auntie. So, like, yesterday I was out with, like, my nephew and my two of my nieces and one of my nephews. And they're, like, very hyper children, let's just say.
I can't be bothered with that. Like, stop being hyper.
It's like, it is fun, but it's also really stressful, because, like, if you're looking after kids, because it's half term right now. So if you're looking after kids, like, you have to make sure that you are entertaining them. Like, I don't think it's fair to look after kids and, like...
Yeah, that's true. To be honest, I don't mind them being hyper, because I remember the most annoying thing when I was growing up was, like, when you're having a good time and no one's dying, there's nothing wrong, but then the adults are like, no, stop messing around. But, like... Now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, okay, there's no problem being hyper, just don't be hyper in my space. Go and be hyper, like, in the other room. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
no, so well, I took them out yesterday. And you have to just keep them constantly entertained. And it is, like, a full-time job, and it doesn't stop. Like, it just doesn't stop. So I was literally had my hands full all day yesterday. So I couldn't make the dessert that I was going to make. So I might actually run to, like, Costco. And pick some things up.
Fair enough.
But yeah, we're going to eat party food, whatever that is. I don't know. Probably just like finger stuff.
Yeah. Well, your mango cake that you made for us last week was very nice.
Thank you. I made a mango cake to commemorate.
Mango and white chocolate.
I did. And I made it up completely on the spot.
Very impressive.
Like, I didn't use a recipe. I didn't. We just had some mango pulp left. I was like, oh, let me stick a bit of this in it. But, yeah.
Very nice.
Thank you, Carlos. What are you having for tea?
I don't know about tea. Well, it depends. You know what's weird? Like, I think of tea, because the whole argument is, like, in the north, it's meant to be breakfast, dinner, tea. But I do think of tea as being the evening meal, like, sometimes. Like I don't think I say tea that much, but if someone said tea, I know what that means. But dinner to me, I don't see that as lunch, personally. Like, I see lunch as lunch. I don't see.
I don't ever see.
But in the north, it's meant to be that you see lunch as dinner. But I don't. Dinner to me implies evening. Like, yeah.
True, because dinner time, like when you're at school, it's like dinner time. We call it dinner time.
Hot school dinners, but it's lunch, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, we say. Oh my god, growing up in school, we always ever said dinner time. Do they say lunch time elsewhere?
In high school, I think they said lunch.
Nah, I think we said dinner time. You know. I do think of it as lunch, breakfast, lunch, and then I use the evening meal interchangeably, like dinner and tea. So, like, I'll just say either one.
I only really say tea if I'm like, what's for tea? Like that. Like, I don't really. I always
ask people what's for tea. But also, you know, like in down south, they call high school secondary school. They think it's really weird that we call it high school.
I think I wouldn't say, like, I've heard people say that. And, like, I don't think it's weird that people call it that. I think what's weird is that they think it's weird that we call it high school.
Yeah. Like, it is high school. Like, in my school, the name is something high school. The school that I went to.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally in the name. But in London, they just call it secondary school.
Did they
actually? Language barriers refer to our most recent TikTok.
Yeah. What's brunch? Right, but yeah, to answer your question, I don't know about dinner because it's Bianca's mum's birthday.
Oh,
so,
today!
Yeah,
oh,
which means it's
birthday,
1 year since the... What's going on there?
It's because Bianca's a Canani. Yeah,
Bianca, so means it's 1 month, not 1 month, 1 year since the cocktail party. Nearly a year of marriage.
Oh my God, how do you feel about that?
Honestly, not any type of way. It's gone by so quickly. I don't think I've even had time to register it.
First year of marriage. Do you think it's been, like, distinctly different to when you were in a relationship? compared to when you're married?
Not distinctly, no. It has been different, but not distinctly.
What was different and what was not different?
I think just it's more just like the realization that you're like, oh yeah, I'm married. Like, do you know what I mean?
Do you
like,
know what I think is just so lovely? Is that you and Mianka are family.
That's very true. I mean, it didn't necessarily feel any... Yeah,
different,
I,
but I like, think, but yeah, as in no, technically, yeah, legally, yeah. In terms of paperwork, you guys yeah. are family. Like, there was yeah. one girl who, like, she's similar age to us, and like, she got married, and she said she had this moment, like, she was flying somewhere, and like, you know, sometimes you have to fill out the immigration forms. And usually she'd take one for her boyfriend, she'd take one for herself, but she'd gotten married recently, and she was like, we only needed one because we count as one family now. And I was like, oh, that's yeah. just so, that's so beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
Crazy,
but yeah, that's what happened tonight. But for lunch, they went you know, on Wimsel Road, Jaffa.
Oh, we are. Oh, I love Jaffa.
Yeah, so
it is a Wimsel. It is a Wimmy institution, isn't it?
So they got takeaway from there. So I think they should be waiting for me at home. So I'm very excited for that.
Oh, I'm really hungry. I haven't eaten. I need to fix my eating habits, man. It's really, really bad. I have the worst like ADHD eating habits. Very disordered eating. So I'm really hungry.
Yeah, we're going to play a bit of music for the rest of the episode so Halima can go off and organise her partying. But
nice to chat, guys.
Yeah, very nice to chat.
See you next week.
Bye.